Hello, welcome back to Coming Together into Relationships of Evolutionary Astrology Teachings. This is Bradley Narragon. I'm here on August 27th, beautiful Sunday morning, and I've been doing something that I do quite often with evolutionary astrology. And that is contemplate the nature and meaning of desire. Not in like a, I'm all thinking, you know, like more in a sense that I've been kind of grappling with and a little confused by how to make sense of it all, to be honest with you. This whole paradigm of evolutionary astrology is based on the fact that as souls, we incarnate because we have desires, and that is natural, and that we play those desires out until we're done with doing that thing. And then we have other desires, and then we keep going until essentially we're done. I just popped on Instagram for a second this morning, and I saw this clip from Krishna Das, which I freaking loved, because he basically was saying that his guru, Neem Karoli Baba Maharaji, was saying that like meditation is not something that you do or decide to do. It's a state that occurs naturally as we evolve. And that if you're deciding that you are going to meditate, or that you want to, or you're going to quote, try to, like it doesn't work. It's kind of like mentally thinking and wanting to be in a more spiritual place. And we could do that for a long time and convince ourselves we're in some place that maybe we haven't evolved to. We can do a lot of things in our minds. It's crazy the places we live. Sometimes I just go around and think, I'm like, what if you could go in and see the reality that people are living in their minds? I don't know. It'd be interesting. It'd be a trip. But the thing that I really, back to desire, I think that in my last podcast on the problem with evolutionary stages, part of the quote-unquote problem to me is just simply the conditioning of Western consciousness, in this conditioning in terms of, you know, like wanting some method or formula or linear thing that defines how life goes or what we do, and it doesn't really work that way. You know, this idea that, oh, you know, like if exhausting all your desires, then eventually you'll reach enlightenment. And then that's like, it somehow plants the seed in consciousness of like, desires are bad. Like, let's get rid of these desires. I mean, not for everyone, but for some. And then of course you've got this distortion of the teachings of Jesus, the religion of Christianity, that's conditioned the consciousness, overlaid, which has demonized desire and created a lot of confusion for a lot of souls in the psyche about complete self-acceptance of the desires that we have, and a picture of, you know, what it means to be pure or evolving, or however all these things get tangled up, right? But I think my point is that I wanted to make today, excuse me, It's just that I started thinking about it. I actually recorded a podcast last night that I'm not going to release because I got to a place in that talk where I realized where I was heading. And it was actually, this is my own cutting edge, new realizations after, 12 years of doing evolutionary astrology and milling over some of the same darn concepts. But I had this thought last night as I was just kind of like trying to go through this thing about the difference between desire and habit and attachment. And I realized, this is my little epiphany, which is probably really obvious to everyone else, but I realized, so if we kind of like zoom out and the EA paradigm, we start with Pluto, right? And Pluto represents the soul's desires. And Mars is a lower octave of Pluto. Mars, Aries, first house, represents the desires that we have that we are conscious of, whereas at the Pluto level, we may not be conscious of that, even though it can be the deepest driving factor that shapes our life. That always just gets me, you know? It's like, honestly, I feel like I was blind to my deepest soul's desires until I got into evolutionary astrology, and now it's so freaking right in front of my face that I'm just, getting hammered over the head with my own compulsions every day. Not hammered, it's like, it's so like right there. It's just like, how could I not see my soul's desires because it's freaking manifesting 24/7 in my consciousness? But before this, I didn't really get it. It's such a trip. But what the heck do you do with that? What do you do with that knowledge, and is it helpful? That's a whole nother topic, perhaps. But so we start with Pluto Mars desire, and the Mars Pluto cycle in evolutionary astrology is very important, especially at least the evolutionary astrology that Jeffrey Wolf Green taught. The Mars Pluto cycle represents how many lifetimes we've been acting out the desire that emanates from the soul that's correlates to Pluto's placement in the chart. So if somebody has a Mars-Pluto conjunction and it's a new phase, it's a brand new cycle. But if it's a Mars-Pluto conjunction, it's balsamic. They've been doing whatever that Pluto by house and sign is in their chart for many lifetimes. Old familiar, just kind of like, okay, done this, doing it again. Right. So that's interesting that that's so crucial for us in this paradigm. But the thought, the little epiphany is that simply, okay, if we look at the nature of desire, well, I should go back and just say, we know that we start with Pluto and then we go to the south node of the moon, and then we go to the ruler of the south node. that's the start of the Pluto formula, and then, the evolutionary path of the soul is the Pluto polarity point, which is, facilitated by evolving into this identity symbolized by the north node of the moon. And that process is facilitated by doing whatever the ruler of the north node of the moon represents in the chart. and there's exceptions to this, squares to the nodes, Pluto conjunct the north node, Pluto conjunct the south node. There's reasons why it might not play out that in that kind of straightforward Pluto formula. But in a lot of cases it does, and that's an aside. I'm not going to get into that right now. So if we look at this, we see that the soul has desires and we incarnate. And then basically from the desires that we act out, we, in a sense, kind of like south node of the moon, we form identity around what we're doing. We form identity around our actions. We form emotional security patterns around what we're doing, and that becomes familiar. And so I was like, well, if you look at this from this point of view, Pluto and the south node of the moon, we basically have the Aries archetype and the Cancer archetype, and that desire Aries essentially leads into Cancer. So at some point, something's new. And then, you know, in Taurus, becomes more established and in our being. And in Gemini, of course, we are, you know, branching out from this newfound established place, and discovering. But, you know, it also then leads into Cancer, that whole thing of that transition from Gemini to Cancer is kind of like that first quarter square of the whole first quarter. Is it's still new, it's still evolving, you know, we got established in it, and then we're discovering what this is. And then at the first quarter square, the entry into Cancer, it really has to take a form. It takes some identity. What form will it take? What do we identify with this new thing that has come in? So there's this process that desire leads into who we know ourselves to be eventually, identity. Like I'm a doctor. At some point, the soul desired to be a medical physician or a doctor. There could have been many lifetimes. And then this lifetime, the desire is again renewed, and by going through all of the effort to reach that goal, by following that desire, one then identifies with what they've become, right? And so I'm just playing with this correlation between desire, Mars, Aries, first house, and emotional security, identity, Cancer, fourth house, moon, nodes of the moon. Basically, this idea of attachment comes from really wanting to have what we desire. So it kind of implies that there is a level of, it doesn't necessarily apply emotional security to it, but attachment is a little different than habit, but there's an overlap there for sure. But one of the things I was kind of teasing out was like, okay, let's say, let's say that I love sake and I like drinking it, and it's something that I do, and I have the desire to get some good sake and enjoy it, and I do that, and then I do that regularly. It becomes a regular habit. I'm out on the porch at night, I'm sipping my sake. It's still a desire to have this experience, but it also has become habit, right? There's also a comfort and a security, maybe even an identification with being a sake drinker. So in light of that, I wanted to say that if you consider how the Aries first house Mars archetype is defined in evolutionary astrology, it's emerging, it's new, it's becoming. We say that we are in a state of becoming. It's a process of self-discovery because it's freaking new. It's the first thing, right? If we desire something that is more like what we do every day or every week, it's not really new. I mean, it's new, but it's old. And so, right, and that's where this whole concept of like samskaras comes from, is if somebody has Pluto in the seventh house and they desire relationship, and they've desired and been in relationships multiple times in this lifetime and for lifetimes, and they still desire relationship. So there's the new experience of relationship, but then there's also just the habit of it, of fulfilling the desire, which goes back to the whole Pluto South node. There becomes this emotional security within having the desire. There becomes habit with it. So desire, essentially, which is nothing new, desire forms habit. I think the point that I wanted to make and get at is, if we can, excuse me, I just needed a drink. If we can understand that desire forms habit and that's natural, you know, and then that's, it's natural, it's normal, it's actually a need. It's a need for the Cancer moon, the nodes, they're serving us a purpose and a function, as well as desire is serving us a purpose and a function. It's, and in case of the moon, the nodes, fourth house Cancer, there's this regulation. We need some sort of consistency. We need to find some security and identity. And, you know, opposite Cancer is Capricorn, that ego, that identity, that regulation of environment for us and how we interact with it allows us to be functional in the world. Very basic level of the Cancer Capricorn polarity. So the point that I'm trying to get to here is that when we consider this Aries first house Mars archetype as something totally new, and we compare it to what happens with desire as it becomes habit, and then kind of transitions into more of a Cancer fourth house ego moon nodes element, identity, and security, it's not like, so the desire that the soul has is essentially new. It's emerging. If we are serving the soul, we are seeking out that leading edge of our own evolution of what do we really want to do and what are we doing because it's just more secure and we're holding on to it. And this, so in this sense, if you think about the Pluto polarity point, that represents this evolutionary path for the soul. It doesn't mean not do the Pluto. So in this example of a Pluto in the seventh house, you know, somebody needs to do their first house evolutionary path to discover themselves as an individual and their own desires, and not just be in relationship to for the emotional security of the relationship, for the compulsion of needing to be needed and giving and receiving and having, you know, peace and harmony in relations. They need the courage to act as who they are as an individual within relationship. But it doesn't mean to not do the Pluto in the seventh house, because this still represents the soul's desire. And so the whole idea is that then we do that in a new way. And so we're still evolving it within relationship and how we relate to people. And there are still, it's basically, you know, we can do the Pluto in the old way, or we could do it in a new way. And the new way includes the polarity to Pluto, and it includes the North Node, right? And if we do it in the old way, it's going to be more seen as the South Node and not including the polarity to Pluto. And you could argue that they're both desire, but also there are different types of desire. In one, desire is very new. And so that's kind of my point here, is that if we focus on the leading edge of what's emerging as new desire, we can see that the older desire is the desire to essentially repeat the past, which is, of course, nothing new. That's the essence of the whole Pluto teachings, is that that's what we're doing often, is we're desiring to do what we've already done, which is what I'm kind of saying, as that Pluto then goes to the south node of the moon. That form of desire is continuing a pattern, and it's more associated with habit and security and familiarity. So it goes into this lunar realm right away because it's known. There's a comfort to do that. And there's nothing wrong with it necessarily, because like a saying is, it's not like, okay, if you want to evolve, just put yourself in this place where you're constantly pushing the edge of anything that represents familiarity and security. Well, it's not even possible. And if we're like getting into some head trip about getting rid of desires or wanting to do stuff that we don't even naturally desire to do, we're trying to put ourselves into a place that we're not at also. So that's the beauty of the evolutionary astrology paradigm, is that it helps us. This is my opinion. I think that it really, really can help us come to a place of total acceptance of who we are, of the nature of our own desires, of where we are, complete acceptance of where we are, once we kind of get out of our own way and our own head trip around what's good or bad, or what's evolved or unevolved, or, you know, like, it's all just us learning, and it's all based on desire. And so until we desire to do something, you know, we are where we're at, and we do what we do. And so the crux of that is, it's not really trying to do something or be somebody that we're not. It's, you know, what do you really desire to do? Which is very opposite of Christianity's teachings in a way, because, and I'm not saying it's opposite of Jesus' teachings, but it is based on this, you know, following desire as a leading edge of our evolution. And that's probably a whole nother topic that we could go into as well, because I guess I'll leave with this and kind of plant a seed for the next part of this, is that I believe that there's this idea that the nature of the soul's desire, potentially, if we are in service to our soul and what it truly came here to do, that desire is in service to the one, the oneness of all that is. Like we are doing a service to ourselves and to spirit and to all people if we can truly do what our soul incarnated to do. And so it takes this individual desire out of this very individual bubble of consciousness, right? And it spins it into this perspective of, actually, it's not just like me doing a selfish thing. It's just saying, actually, it's shifting how we approach this whole concept of desire and awakening to what our evolutionary purpose is in this lifetime. So I think that makes sense. Okay. Playing with these concepts, I don't know, is this, you know, like, I'm just, honestly, some of this is some new thought thinking for me after all this time. And is this something that you've thought about, already knew? Let me know, you know, like, if you want to share, feel free to send me a message or an email, and maybe I can weave some of the audience's ideas into future talks. I hope that you are well on this day and have love in your heart, peace in your soul.